Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a day on, not a day off. How are you celebrating the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King? There are so many events going on in and around Greater Minnesota on Monday, January 15th, to make sure that you and your family have an opportunity to be educated, empowered, and inspired. Now, to tell us more about just a few of those events that my family and I are be going to, and I wanted to make sure to pass on this information to you, help me welcome to the show Ashley Ullman, the equity strategist from the Minnesota Office of Equity, Opportunity, and Accessibility, and Diego Diaz-Rivero, the health equity strategist from the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Shaletta Show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Happy Saturday.
Hey, it's so great to have you guys on. I think this is both of your first times being on the show.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you are newbies. I will take it easy on you. Now, Ashley, I have to tell you first that one of the things that my family and I are most excited about is seeing Houston White. My kids were his close to school. They met him a couple of times. And they are just so excited about seeing him as one of the featured speakers. Talk to me about the overall slate of events that you all have planned, including Houston White being one of the featured guest speakers.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for picking us up. So the Council on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday is inviting Minnesotans to the 38th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration. Of course, this is hosted by Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan. All of these celebration events are made possible with the support of generous sponsors, including our U.S. Bank exclusive diamond sponsor. So to get to the question you were asking about Houston White and Caroline A. Wanga, we are so honored to be having them host a fireside chat on January 15th for the big flagship celebration. More about that event, because it's going to be so great. It will include performances from the amazingly talented Robbinsdale Area Schools Fair School, Crystal Student Choir and Dance Team. Billy Steele will be there, the legend, and then also Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church.
And you know that's my church. You got to put a pin right there, girl, because you know that's my church. You know that's my church, girl.
Now.
Yes, it is, girl.
Really. Yes, that's amazing. Yes.
And so that's just one of the things going on, Diego. Can you give me an overall, because I've got folks who are taking notes. I've got folks who are listening, and I want to make sure they know that, you know, it's not just that Monday, the 15th, but you all have so many other events that people can take advantage of just in case they are working on the 15th or they have to stay home with the kids that day, or, you know, they've got something else going on and they can't get out on the 15th. You all have so much more stuff happening.
We do. This year, we're truly innovating. It's the first year the state of Minnesota is doing an entire series of events kicking off on January the 11th. So people across the state have options here to engage, participate, be in community, make connections. So really, the goal this year was to amplify as many voices, perspectives, communities, and connections that we could. So we're kicking off on the 11th, Thursday, at Metro State University in St. Paul with the first annual Equity Practitioners Conference hosted by the state of Minnesota. We're very excited for our keynote for Thursday. Then Friday, we're going to have Youth Empowerment Summit at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Saturday, there's going to be a career fair. So all those folks out there looking to make new connections, networking, get a new job maybe, come to our career fair hosted by the State of Minnesota on the Saturday. Saturday is also a day of service. So we're highlighting opportunities throughout the entire state. And in our website, you can find your local library, your local community spaces to connect with new folks, make donations. So Saturday day of service, please stay tuned because there's many options out there on our website and lists that we've curated for folks throughout the entire state to participate. Sunday, we're doing Connections of Hope. So really bringing communities together, really centering the spirit of hope, building in community and making those spiritual relationships and connections with everybody. And yes, on Monday will be your annual event at the Ordway Center.
And that is the big flagship event. Now, Ashley, I'm getting messages from folks and they're like, what's this website? How can I find it? Tell folks where to go so they can get more information.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for asking us. So for more information, I'm going to run y'all the website name. Please come and visit us at mn.gov/OEOA. And where you'll go from there to see where all of these things are unfolding is on our events page. That's also where you will find links for registration and just getting more information for all of those different opportunities that are happening.
Now, here's some messages that I'm getting right now. How much does it cost? Can you get an armband to go to all the different events? Is each individual event a certain rate? Folks want to know what the price is. I already know, but I'm going to let you tell them it's free.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. I have the biggest smile on my face. Y'all that are listening, it is free 99, y'all. Please come out. Again, we have partnered with the most incredible sponsors, collaborators, and partners so that we can create all of these incredible events and platforms for folks to connect. So the whole name of the game is y'all come through, show up, show out, and leave the rest to us. Our incredible sponsors, again, U.S. Bank and the rest have taken care of those things. So none of the events have a cost, and you can find more about that on our website.
Okay, so Diego, this event is family friendly. This is an opportunity to bring your kids, especially if it's free. They are not in school on Monday. They can go on in. You and your entire family grab a seat. Hear Carolyn from Essence. Hear Houston White. You know, go to some of these other amazing opportunities starting on the 11th that you and your family can participate in and take advantage of. And it doesn't cost a dime.
That's correct.
Not a dime.
And talk to me about how you've curated these events, because everything is so intentional, Diego. I can tell that, you know, it wasn't just we're going to have this one thing. We're going to come and we're going to hear Houston White talk and we're going to hear Caroline talk. But, you know, it's so many different layers. You're trying to make sure people network. You're trying to help small businesses. You're trying to make sure people get jobs and they're empowered. It's just so many wonderful things that you're doing. And each one of those things, Diego, goes along with the things that Dr. King stood for and the things that he fought for all Americans.
Absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't have been possible without the council on Dr. King's holiday to begin with. So really building those connections, those relationships through the council, and definitely highlighting Dr. Brosh, the chief equity officer for the state of Minnesota. Her vision for this year has been so inspiring for everybody and really helping leading us as a team behind the scenes, but also to really get in the council on the MLK holiday fired up, really come together. So we've had just really, really, really great meetings, great planning behind the scenes with the council members. And it really has their vision as well that has allowed us to bring this list of events to life.
Well, I can't thank you both enough for being on the show, for working with that entire team and all your sponsors to put on these amazing events. Okay, Miss Ashley, before you go, one more time, give us that website because people are texting me right now. Like, I'm not on the air doing my job. I can't text you, George and Jabbar, because George and Jabbar are listening and they're on my Facebook page right now talking to me in real time. I'm like, y'all know I'm trying to do my job. I'll ask the question. I'll let her give you the website because folks are so excited and want to be a part of these MLK festivities.
Yes, I got you, Ms. Shaletta. So I love it. I love all the excitement, y'all. I'm glad that people are getting excited to essentially attend the Great Minnesota Family Reunion that we're celebrating over MLK Week. So again, make sure to come and visit our website. It's mn.gov/OEOA. We also have social media pages, so feel free to go onto Facebook and do a quick search for MLK Holiday. That's another place that you can find all of the details that you will need. The last thing that we wanted to make sure that people have is getting to our link tree. And so if you want to head that way to get registration taken care of, you can go to linktr.ee/MNMLK Junior Holiday. And the last thing that I want to make sure that I highlight, Ms. Shaletta, is just to make sure one last time that we say again, join us for these incredible events. Make sure that you, yes, bring your children, bring neighbors, bring friends, bring family, and know that many of the events, not only are they free, but many of them have an online option, which is definitely more accessible for some folks. And in addition, there will be ASL and CART services available.
Oh, my God. You guys have thought of everything. You have put together an amazing slate. I hope, and I know that, you know, in the planning of these things, that you're working out logistics, you're working out security, you're making sure that you got great people, you're making sure that you got your marketing and your graphics look good, and you're doing outreach, and you're trying to make sure everything goes, you know, according to plan, and your vendors are all lined up. And so you get just kind of bogged down in the planning of this thing. But, you know, when y'all get a chance, I need y'all to stand back and take a look at this amazing slate of activities that you have put together for Minnesotans right here in the Twin Cities to enjoy and to celebrate Dr. King, and know that you have done an amazing job.
Oh, Ms. Shaletta, we're literally over here getting misty. It's honestly been such an honor to come together. And I just have to, you know, say again, thank you so much to Chief Equity Officer Dr. Barrage, to the council, to all of the partners, to folks within the state agencies who have also been working hard behind the scenes. Y'all, it has been a labor of love, and it is going to be so amazing to bring everybody together.
Teamwork makes the dream work. Thank you so much for both of you being here today. And you will see me, because I'll be like, hey, Ashley, it's me, Diego, it's Shaletta, I'm over here. And then I have like 1,500 kids behind me, because that's how many I have. So if you see, it's like the Partridge Family. If you see me walking with a whole flock of birds behind me, that's me and my babies. And I just can't thank you enough for putting this together so we can have a way to authentically celebrate Dr. King's life.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, you guys stick around. There's more to come. I remember where I was on January 6th. I was at my house in the kitchen. I had MSNBC on in the background as I was preparing lunch for the kids. I was homeschooling at the time, so the children were home all day. And I just kind of kept MSN on in the background, working in news. You never know when something is going to happen. And so you have to be ready to move and on a dime. And I saw the rallies at our nation's capital. I had heard the rhetoric. I had heard the horrible statements that had been made. And I saw the whipping up of anger and hatred and fueled by people who believe that the election results were not what they had reported, and they were going to do something about it come hell or high water. And I remember people crawling up the walls of the Capitol. I remember the photos and the videos of the nooses and them storming in the police officers, some trying to stop them. And them going into the Capitol and breaking windows. It was just, it looked like a Bruce Willis movie. I couldn't believe it was real. And the other thing that I could not believe is that more people who were breaching the historic and sacred grounds of our nation's capital were not shot. I'm going to just tell you, as a black person, if we could just be real and talk real right now, as a black person, I didn't know that anything like this was possible. I did not know that you could beat the police and not be arrested on the spot. I didn't know that you could swear at, spit at, and violate law enforcement officers and not get shot. George Floyd died because an officer put a knee on his neck. Philando Castile died because he had a registered weapon in his car. He wasn't trying to use it on the officer. So many others in our community have died. And they weren't beating up an officer. They weren't storming a Capitol building. So I personally, as a black person, didn't know that you could beat up the police and not die. That just wasn't something I thought was possible. So to see that in real time, and then these men and women go into the Capitol, put their feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk, take historic and sacred landmarks and artifacts out of that building and go home with it like they had won a meat raffle at the VFW. Get back on the plane and go home and not be arrested. That just did not register with me. I didn't know that anything like that was possible. Because, see, I remember watching the videos and hearing the stories from the elders in my community about peaceful protests and sit-ins for civil rights, and then 20 or 30 paddy wagons being outside waiting to arrest every single person. People who were sitting at lunch counters, people who were trying to make sure that every American had the right to vote, people who were just trying to help people get ready for the test, because they used to test you in order to vote to eliminate African Americans from having the right to vote. Folks like Fannie Lou Hamer, when they tried to do that, they would have 40 or 50 police cars. They would take them by the busloads down to the jailhouse. You weren't getting out of there. So to have these people at the Capitol, storming, climbing in, going inside, and being able to come out without being arrested. I did not know anything like that was possible. And then to add insult to injury, the FBI was putting their pictures up on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram asking regular Americans to identify them. Why am I doing your job? If you knew who this was, why didn't you arrest them when they came out of the Capitol? Why didn't you stop them before they got? They shouldn't have been able to get back on their planes and go home to resume their normal lives. They should have been arrested on the spot. Arrested on the spot. How are we going to hold other countries morally accountable for anything when this is the image that is going across the world of our own country? And then the story today is that a Florida resort had to cancel an event that was supposed to take place today featuring Marjorie Taylor Greene. Why? Because they wanted to celebrate and commemorate what happened on January 6th. They're having parties. Marjorie Taylor Greene was the featured speaker. It was an anniversary party of the 2021 attack on the Capitol. So this event put on by the Republicans in Kissimmee, Florida, just outside of Orlando, they went ahead and canceled it. The Westgate Resort said, we don't want no part of this. Please be advised that the Westgate was not made aware of the purpose of this event when we were approached to host a book signing. So it was supposed to be today from 5 to 6. But they've canceled it because they don't want to celebrate one of the recent events in our nation's history that we should be most ashamed of. This should not be a proud moment that we celebrate with a book signing and a celebration. But that's where we are. that is where we are. And you know what? This is the sad part. I hope that we are never, ever back in this place again. On the way to work this morning, I was chatting with my good friend, Sonia Brown. We have been best girlfriends for about 30 plus years now. We met in college, freshman year at University of Houston. She is an educator, but was taking a speech class, and I'm in the School of Communication. And so I was taking that speech class and let her tell it. We were standing outside of the class, and I just looked at her and said, girl, we're going to be friends. Come on over here and stand by me. And we stood next to each other, and I made her laugh, and she giggled, and that was it. The rest is history. As Sonia went on in her career to flourish as an educator and supervisor in Texas, I started working in broadcasting and then took a break to get married and start a family. But Sonia and so many of my other friends, they don't have children. They chose their careers, and for whatever reason, they say, you know what, this is what I want to do. My friend Erica has a husband, but she said, you know what? I know that I don't want kids. And some of them are only children or have one or two siblings. And some of those have passed away. So when I saw the story in Fortune magazine that said a disproportionate number of black women are kinless as they age and they deserve a social safety net, I said, okay, all right, okay, I need to explore this story because I never thought about it, but I'm always checking on my friend Sonia. I'm always checking on my friend Angela. So many of my friends who are educated, degreed, professional, hardworking African-American women who don't have a lot of family around them. I didn't realize that. And so I said, well, wait a minute, who's in this story? Who is the who's the expert? Because I got to figure out how this whole fictive kin network is and how it's impacting black women. And so I saw, oh, Dr. Chris Marsh. Okay, well, wait a minute. Who is Dr. Chris Marsh and what is she doing? What is she all about? She is the associate professor and director of graduate studies at the University of Maryland, and she is joining me now. Dr. Marsh, thank you so much for being on the show.
It is such a pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this story blew my mind. I'm living it, but I'm not thinking about it. And I'm telling my friends, you know, Fanchon and Angela and Ursula and Erica, I said, girl, you know, we got to pray for each other because we may be the only people praying for each other because we're all we got. And we say that all the time. We're all we got. But really, it's true. We really are all that we have.
Right. And we need to have a conversation about this.
Okay, so this story blew everybody's mind. It's in Fortune magazine. A disproportionate number of black women are kinless as they age. What has your research shown you?
So I just wrote a book about people that are single and living alone in the black middle class. The title of the book is called The Love Jones Cohort. And one of the reasons why I decided that I had to write the book is because I was so tired of people asking, why aren't successful black women getting married? I wanted to know what single people were doing and how they were living their lives. And part of the conversation that comes up when I interviewed 63 people for the book is that they're single and living alone, but although they don't have a partner, they don't have children, they do have friends, and friends play a central role in the lifestyle of those that are single. So what it's forcing the conversation to do, it's forcing the conversation to broaden the idea of what we mean when we say family. If we think of family from a very traditional kind of way, and if we use like maybe the Census Bureau's definition, by way of definition by the Census Bureau, a family is someone that you're related to by blood, marriage, or adoption. And so after writing this book, I'm making a strong argument that we need to redefine or extend what we mean by the term family. We have a lot of people that are in friendships or non-romantic relationships that are as tight as family or even thicker than a family bond. But unfortunately, we get stuck in this idea of family being like this mother, father, 2.5 children, and a black picket fence. And the data's just not there to prove that that's what's happening now. It's not just this heteronormative family. You have these people that have been friends. I appreciate the beginning of the story, and you talked about your friend for 30 years. Now, we need to think of a way in which we can institutionalize that relationship with your friend so that we can acknowledge that friendship that's been in place for 30 years. So one, I want us to rethink about family, think about if family is openly discriminated against people who don't have somebody in their house with them. Mm-hmm. And if we were to expand the definition of family, what would it look like? And so those are some of the conversations that we have to have, because the data is clear. You have a lot of people that are choosing singlehood or returning to singlehood. And when you start talking about black folks, black women dominate in that category. So because we want to be sensitive to where black women are, I think it's really important to have a conversation about, should we continue to define family a certain way? And what would be the benefits if we broaden the definition of family?
Okay. And this is the thing that concerns me, is when we start talking about black women being kinless and redefining the definition of family, it's so important that we do that right now. Because I'm thinking about my friend Toni Randolph, and she actually bought my house for me in St. Paul. She had cancer and she died. And we are all mm-hmm. her friends, but we feel like sisters, but we got to sit on the back row. You know what I mean?
Right.
If something happens to my friend Sonia, and I got to take care of her, because you know in our community we don't put our people in the nursing home, right? But I don't have any rights. So if I go in, I got to wait till some cousin from out of town come that she ain't talked to in 20 years to make a decision right. about what she wants to do when I know what she wants to do. So redefining
Absolutely.
Family is so important, and putting the wills and the trust and, you know, that kind of information in place so that the doctors know and the neighbors know and the job knows. Listen, I know we ain't no blood relative, but I'm next to kin.
Right, right. Absolutely. And so I want to complicate the story just a little bit, and I want to slow walk this. So we understand that we need to redefine family, and we need to think about how family looks a little different. But if we take more of a 30,000-foot view as well, I am a sociologist. One of the arguments that I make in my book is that I'm arguing that structural forces, so for example, racism, so structural forces are constraining my personal choices. If I were to say that a little bit differently, I would say, like, racism is constraining my personal choices. So if I, because I, Chris Marsh, have a PhD, and let's just say I'm making six figures, let's just say I own my own home, let's say I have a will and a living trust in place. If I want to find another black man that fits all that pedigree, whether or not, not a judgment call, just say if I want somebody who meets the same pedigree as me and they're not there for me to marry, and that's because of racism. We can talk about mm-hmm. like the high prison rates, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if structural forces constrain my personal choices, and then you don't allow me to define a family that works for me, you're discriminating against me in plain sight. And that, I would argue, is insidious. And we need to talk more about singlehood from the structural force, from the structural perspective, and then what we can do on the policy side to make sure that these singles are not continuing to be disadvantaged.
Okay. Now, I need you to tell me, because people are already texting me, where's this book and how can I find it? Because in your book, The Love Jones Cohort, you note that single middle-class black Americans have tapped into the long cultural tradition of creating kinship. And what we have in Minnesota is a lot of mixed race families. And so what I'm getting is text message that says, what do you mean creating kin? What do you mean this extended family? It's new and different to some people, and they're hearing about it for the first time. So you got to tell us, number one, how you can find this Love Jones Cohort book, because I want to make sure the people who are listening have access to it.
Absolutely. So you can go to, it's on Amazon. It's on most independent bookstores. I also have a paperback and I have an audio book as well. It's funny because a lot of my students are like, Dr. Marsh, we're so mad that you're not reading the audio, narrating the audio book. So it's not my voice. It is somebody else's voice, but it is a Black woman that's narrating the book. So you can go to Amazon. You can go to any independent bookstore. You can actually go to my website, which is drchrismarsh.com. You can find me on social media. My handles are drchris, K-R-I-S, Marsh, and links to my book are there. The book is it's a really great read, and I think it'll open up people's eyes to a lot of things that are in plain sight. I just put names to it, I put text to it, and now I give you the vocabulary for it. And I would argue that your listeners probably understand this extended family that I'm talking about, or this fictive kinship, or these augmented families that I'm talking about, because they're in them every day and just don't even realize it. But right. Now I've given the people the vocabulary for it. And the reason why I say augmented families is because there was a sociologist years ago, his name was Andrew Billingsley, and he was talking about augmented families, where it's not a mother, father, two mothers, two fathers, but it is these extended friends that you've had for many years that are our family. And we've been doing it for years, but why is it not being institutionalized? And it needs to be institutionalized. And the reason why it really needs to be institutionalized is because, you're discriminating against singles in plain sight. I give three examples. One is a benign example, and one everybody's going to shake their head to as they're listening. So if I, Chris Marsh, have a cell phone, I want to go to Verizon and get the family discount on my one cell phone. I don't want to have to pay more for my one cell phone. I want the family discount. And that's a benign example. A more egregious example is vacationing. I want to go on vacation. Single occupancy is more expensive than double occupancy.
Yeah, it is. On the way to work this morning, I was chatting with my good friend, Sonia Brown. We have been best girlfriends for about 30 plus years now. We met in college, freshman year at University of Houston. She is an educator, but was taking a speech class, and I'm in the School of Communication. And so I was taking that speech class and let her tell it. We were standing outside of the class, and I just looked at her and said, girl, we're going to be friends. Come on over here and stand by me. And we stood next to each other, and I made her laugh, and she giggled, and that was it. The rest is history. As Sonia went on in her career to flourish as an educator and supervisor in Texas, I started working in broadcasting and then took a break to get married and start a family. But Sonia and so many of my other friends, they don't have children. They chose their careers, and for whatever reason, they say, you know what, this is what I want to do. My friend Erica has a husband, but she said, you know what? I know that I don't want kids. And some of them are only children or have one or two siblings. And some of those have passed away. So when I saw the story in Fortune magazine that said a disproportionate number of Black women are kinless as they age, and they deserve a social safety net, I said, okay, all right, okay. I need to explore this story because I never thought about it, but I'm always checking on my friend Sonia. I'm always checking on my friend Angela. So many of my friends who are educated, degreed, professional, hardworking African-American women who don't have a lot of family around them. I didn't realize that. And so I said, well, wait a minute, who's in this story? Who is the who's the expert? Because I got to figure out how this whole fictive kin network is and how it's impacting Black women. And so I saw, oh, Dr. Chris Marsh. Okay, well, wait a minute. Who is Dr. Chris Marsh, and what is she doing? What is she all about? She is the associate professor and director of graduate studies at the University of Maryland, and she is joining me now. Dr. Marsh, thank you so much for being on the show.
It is such a pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So this story blew my mind. I'm living it, but I'm not thinking about it. And I'm telling my friends, you know, Fanchon and Angela and Ursula and Erica. I said, girl, you know, we got to pray for each other because we may be the only people praying for each other because we're all we got. And we say that all the time. We're all we got. But really, it's true. We really are all that we have.
Right. And we need to have a conversation about this.
Okay, so this story blew everybody's mind. It's in Fortune magazine. A disproportionate number of Black women are kinless as they age. What has your research shown you?
So I just wrote a book about people that are single and living alone in the Black middle class. The title of the book is called The Love Jones Cohort. And one of the reasons why I decided that I had to write the book is because I was so tired of people asking, why aren't successful Black women getting married? I wanted to know what single people were doing and how they were living their lives. And part of the conversation that comes up when I interviewed 63 people for the book is that they're single and living alone, but although they don't have a partner, they don't have children, they do have friends, and friends play a central role in the lifestyle of those that are single. So what it's forcing the conversation to do, it's forcing the conversation to broaden the idea of what we mean when we say family.
Mm.
If we think of family from a very traditional kind of way, if we use like maybe the Census Bureau's definition, by way of definition by the Census Bureau, a family is someone that you're related to by blood, marriage, or adoption. And so after writing this book, I'm making a strong argument that we need to redefine or extend what we mean by the term family. We have a lot of people that are in friendships or non-romantic relationships that are as tight as family or even thicker than a family bond. But unfortunately, we get stuck in this idea of family being like this mother, father, 2.5 children, and a Black picket fence. And the data is just not there to prove that that's what's happening now. It's not just this heteronormative family. You have these people that have been friends. I appreciate the beginning of the story, and you talked about your friend for 30 years. Now, we need to think of a way in which we can institutionalize that relationship with your friend so that we can acknowledge that friendship that's been in place for 30 years. So one, I want us to rethink about family, think about if family is openly discriminated against people who don't have somebody in their house with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to expand the definition of family, what would it look like? And so those are some of the conversations that we have to have because the data is clear. You have a lot of people that are choosing singlehood or returning to singlehood. And when you start talking about Black folks, Black women dominate in that category. So because we want to be sensitive to where Black women are, I think it's really important to have a conversation about should we continue to define family a certain way? And what would be the benefits if we broaden the definition of family?
Okay. And this is the thing that concerns me is when we start talking about Black women being kinless and redefining the definition of family, it's so important that we do that right now. Because I'm thinking about my friend Toni Randolph, and she actually bought my house for me in St. Paul. She had cancer and she died. And we are all her friends, but we feel like sisters, but we got to sit on the back row. You know what I mean?
Right.
If something happens to my friend Sonia and I got to take care of her because, you know, in our community, we don't put our people in the nursing home. Right. But I don't have any rights. So if I go in, I got to wait till some cousin from out of town come that she ain't talked to in 20 years to make a decision
right.
about what she wants to do when I know what she wants to do. So redefining family is so important, and putting the wills and the trust and, you know, that kind of information in place so that the doctors know and the neighbors know and the job knows. Listen, I know we ain't no blood relative, but I'm next to kin.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And so I want to complicate the story just a little bit, and I want to slow walk this. So we understand that we need to redefine family, and we need to think about how family looks a little different. But if we take more of a 30,000-foot view as well, I am a sociologist. One of the arguments that I make in my book is that I'm arguing that structural forces, so for example, racism, so structural forces are constraining my personal choices. If I were to say that a little bit differently, I would say like racism is constraining my personal choices. So if I, because I, Chris Marsh, have a PhD, and let's just say I'm making six figures, let's just say I own my own home, let's say I have a will and a living trust in place. If I want to find another black man that fits all that pedigree, whether or not, not a judgment call, just say if I want somebody who meets the same pedigree as me and they're not there for me to marry, structural, and that's because of racism, we can talk about like the high prison rates, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if structural forces constrain my personal choices, and then you don't allow me to define a family that works for me, you're discriminating against me in plain sight. And that, I would argue, is insidious. And we need to talk more about singlehood from the structural force, from the structural perspective, and then what we can do on the policy side to make sure that these singles are not continuing to be disadvantaged.
Okay, now I need you to tell me, because people are already texting me, where's this book and how can I find it? Because in your book, The Love Jones Cohort, you note that single middle-class Black Americans have tapped into the long cultural tradition of creating kinship. And what we have in Minnesota is a lot of mixed-race families. And so what I'm getting is text message that says, what do you mean creating kin? What do you mean this extended family? It's new and different to some people, and they're hearing about it for the first time. So you got to tell us, number one, how you can find this Love Jones Cohort book, because I want to make sure the people who are listening have access to it.
Absolutely. So you can go to, it's on Amazon. It's on most independent bookstores. I also have a paperback and I have an audio book as well. It's funny because a lot of my students are like, Dr. Marsh, we're so mad that you're not reading the audio, narrating the audio book. So it's not my voice. It is somebody else's voice, but it is a black woman that's narrating the book. So you can go to Amazon. You can go to any independent bookstore. You can actually go to my website, which is drchrismarsh.com. You can find me on social media. My handles are drchris, K-R-I-S, Marsh, and links to my book are there. The book is it's a really great read, and I think it'll open up people's eyes to a lot of things that are in plain sight. I just put names to it, I put text to it, and now I give you the vocabulary for it. And I would argue that your listeners probably understand this extended family that I'm talking about, or this fictive kinship, or these augmented families that I'm talking about, because they're in them every day and just don't even realize it. But right. Now I've given the people the vocabulary for it. And the reason why I say augmented families is because there was a sociologist years ago, his name was Andrew Billingsley, and he was talking about augmented families, where it's not a mother, father, two mothers, two fathers, but it is these extended friends that you've had for many years that are our family. And we've been doing it for years, but why is it not being institutionalized? And it needs to be institutionalized. And the reason why it really needs to be institutionalized is because, you're discriminating against singles in plain sight. I give three examples. One is a benign example, and one everybody's going to shake their head to as they're listening. So if I, Chris Marsh, have a cell phone, I want to go to Verizon and get the family discount on my one cell phone. I don't want to have to pay more for my one cell phone. I want the family discount. And that's a benign example. A more egregious example is vacationing. I want to go on vacation. Single occupancy is more expensive than double occupancy.
Yeah, it is.
And the one that everybody is going to shake their head to as I start to talk about it is the tax structure.
Girl, listen.
There is a singlehood penalty built into the tax structure. And there's a really great book by Dorothy Brown. She's out of the law tradition. It's called The Whiteness of Wealth. And one of the things she argues is that we should all file taxes as single people. And if we don't all file taxes as single people, I want to file the taxes as the Marsh family of one and want to get my tax benefit as the Marsh family. So there's two arguments that I'm making in the book. One, family should be one person. And family should be these augmented families that aren't necessarily husbands and wives or husbands and husbands. We should be able to legally recognize these institutions and entities and be able to get some of the benefits. Because what we do know from some of the social science literature is that especially Black women, and I talk about it in the book, our income and our time becomes the extended family income and time. So if I'm paying for my niece or my nephew's tuition, I want some kind of tax write-off on that, some kind of way. And so we really need to think about the way in which we structure taxes and how singles are completely and totally disadvantaged.
Well, I am so glad that you have joined us today. You have given us a lot to chew on. We need knife and fork and meat tenderizer for this, Dr. Marsh. Dr. Chris Marsh, Associate Professor and Director of Graduate Studies at the University of Maryland. If y'all don't do nothing else, go and pick up her book, The Love Jones Corhart. Dr. Marsh, thank you so much for being here.
It's such a pleasure to be with you.
All right. You guys stick around. My friend Steve Thompson is coming up next. It is 2:49. It is also my favorite part of the Shaletta Show. I get to talk to my friend Steve Thompson. He is coming up next at 3 o'clock. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Shaletta. How was that big road trip?
Oh, my God. We had so much fun. And I just have to tell you, I got a chance to talk with Tammy. I messed up her last name. I was having hot flash. I called her Tammy McLean, but her name is Tammy Cabrera. So I apologize to Tammy for giving her the whole wrong last name. Fighting off this menopause, Steve. It ain't no joke. Just be glad you're a man right now. She did you see Marcus Lemonis gave her $40,000 to keep her bakery open?
That is a great story. And I know, He gave you something pretty nice once upon a time.
Gave us that RV. I told her we're cousins now because we both have the same rich uncle. Yeah. But he's given her like not only $40,000, but all that business advice. And she says the day he called was the day she was getting ready to close her store.
Wow. Yeah, it is amazing. It is so hard to run a small business and all the challenges. And then you throw COVID into the mix. For businesses large and small. And I know you were quoted in a story about your favorite florist.
Soderbergh's is closing. Are you heartbroken? 99 and a half years, Steve.
Unbelievable that story and what went on there and an amazing history. And I saw your name in that story and that's incredible.
I was calling because my friend Christy Peel, you know Christy Peel who owns Media Mindfield.
Sure.
She got in a car crash. And so I wanted to send her some flowers just to say, hey, girl, I'm thinking about you. I love you. And called over there and shut down. So you know me, I'm digging and trying to figure out what's going on. And so, you know, I just get a little bit of that information and find out that the workers were, you know, let go immediately, you know, no income coming in. And nobody can afford at the first of the year, Steve, to lose their job just suddenly and not have a check come in. So, you know, those people over there work so hard, from the drivers to the front office people to the folks who take the orders online. So I was like, everybody send me your resume. If I can't hire you, we're going to find you a job somewhere because, you know, no woman, no man left behind. We've got to try to do what we can to help one another, especially during these times.
Well, and Shaletta, something like that, a business that's been around for so long, has so many loyal customers. Mm-hmm. You would think someone would want to step into the void and keep that going.
Well, what I'm hearing from some folks is that they're hoping that, you know, someone will either buy it or one of the employees or business managers or somebody will buy it. And they're still trying to work on it right now. But so far, the place is shut down. And, you know, the last time I was there, I counted at least 12 employees between the drivers and the designers and the online order takers and the little lady who does the stuff, you know, over the phone and, you know, the young ladies who work at the front desk and the business manager. And it's so sad to think that suddenly without, you know, due to no fault of their own, you know, at least a dozen or two hardworking Twin Cities residents just don't have jobs anymore.
Yeah, it is a great opportunity. You would think someone would want to step in and say, hey, this is ready to go. It's got a built-in client list. It has an almost 100-year reputation in the marketplace. And you think someone would be able to jump in there and make a go of it.
That's what I'm hoping. And, you know, I never did get a chance to give Christy her flowers. Because at this point, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm a real loyal customer. I'm like, okay, so maybe tomorrow, maybe the day after tomorrow. But so far, you know, it's still closed. It's still shut down. So it's, you know, I don't really like being a Debbie Downer. But I have to tell you, Steve, that one hit me in the gut. I ain't going to lie to you.
Yeah, it is sad, particularly these businesses that have been around for a long time. It really does sadden me. The mom and pop businesses, so to speak, that we've all become so familiar with. And I think it is important to try and spend. It's like you can go buy hardware anywhere, but I try to get out to the local hardware store down the street as much as I can, because I know it's locally owned and there's a lot of local folks that work in that hardware store.
And so, you have to be intentional when you're doing stuff like that. You know, you have to be thoughtful of, you know, the local toy store, the local, you know, folks.
Bookstore.
Bookstore, the Red Balloon, the Moon Palace, the Gully Wobble. You got to pass up all these places. You got to get over to Flavor Cafe. Nothing against, you know, any of the other retail chains. But, you know, here's a young African-American woman opened up a coffee shop in Frogtown. I leave Cottage Grove. And that's the one thing that Dee DePass asked me for that Star Tribune article. She was like, Shaletta, why are you... You live in Cottage Grove. Why do you have a house account at a business on Lake Street? Number one, it's a mom and pop shop. I'm a small business owner, and so I'm intentional about supporting other small business owners.
Yeah, no doubt. It's so important that the lifeblood of communities, not only in the city but in the suburbs and in small towns, it's important.
We got to do that. Okay, what we got to do to get in the playoffs? Are we out of the playoffs? Do the Vikings have a chance, Steve? What is going on? Because my blood pressure can't take it.
They have a chance, but when you don't have a quarterback you can lean on, it's pretty tough. Number one, they've got to win in Detroit and then get a fair amount of help. Tomorrow they need Chicago to win in Green Bay, among other things, for the Vikings to get into the playoffs. In reality, with their quarterback situation, you get into the playoffs, you know, what could they do? I mean, I think the Vikings, in reality, should be in a mode of thinking about what do we need to do in the offseason? What do we do about Kirk Cousins? How do we lock in Justin Jefferson? And how do we get more talent on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, there is a big to-do list for Kwesi Adolfo-Mensa and, of course, Kevin O'Connell, the head coach. They've got a lot to do before next year.
Okay, who's getting fired? Is somebody getting fired? Is this all just the luck of the draw? No. Is this just injuries? Did somebody not do their job?
Yeah, it's injuries. When you lose, for instance, Kirk Cousins, among others, DJ Wanham was a big loss on the defensive line. When you're losing players like that, TJ Hawkinson went down with a season-ending injury. When you're losing that kind of talent, particularly your number one quarterback, it's going to be a challenge.
All right, what's not going to be a challenge is people sticking around, because your show is coming up next. We've got Tech Talk. We've got Steve Thompson. We've got more on CCO Radio. It is 2:49. It is also my favorite part of the Shaletta Show. I get to talk to my friend Steve Thompson. He is coming up next at 3 o'clock. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Shaletta. How was that big road trip?
Oh, my God. We had so much fun. And I just have to tell you, I got a chance to talk with Tammy. I messed up her last name. I was having hot flash. I called her Tammy McClain, but her name is Tammy Cabrera. So I apologize to Tammy for giving her the whole wrong last name. Fighting off this menopause, Steve. It ain't no joke. Just be glad you're a man right now. Did you see Marcus Lemonis gave her $40,000 to keep her bakery open?
That is a great story. And I know, He gave you something pretty nice once upon a time.
Gave us that RV. I told her we're cousins now because we both have the same rich uncle. Yeah. But he's given her, like, not only $40,000, but all that business advice. And she says the day he called was the day she was getting ready to close her store. Wow.
Yeah, it is amazing. It is so hard to run a small business and all the challenges. And then you throw COVID into the mix for businesses large and small. And I know you were quoted in a story about your favorite florist.
Soderbergh's is closing. Is that, are you heartbroken? 99 and a half years, Steve.
Unbelievable that story and what went on there and an amazing history. And I saw your name in that story, and that's incredible.
I was calling because my friend Christy Peel, you know Christy Peel, who owns Media Mindfield.
Sure.
She got in a car crash. And so I wanted to send her some flowers just to say, hey, girl, I'm thinking about you. I love you. And called over there and shut down. So you know me, I'm digging and trying to figure out what's going on. And so,
right. You
know, I just get a little bit of that information and find out that the workers were, you know, let go immediately. You know, no income coming in. And nobody can afford at the first of the year, Steve, to lose their job just suddenly and not have a check come in. So, you know, those people over there work so hard, from the drivers to the front office people to the folks who take the orders online. So I was like, everybody send me your resume. If I can't hire you, we're going to find you a job somewhere because, you know, no woman, no man left behind. We've got to try to do what we can to help one another, especially during these times.
Well, and Shaletta, something like that, a business that's been around for so long, has so many loyal customers. Mm-hmm. You would think someone would want to step into the void and keep that going.
Well, what I'm hearing from some folks is that they're hoping that, you know, someone will either buy it or one of the employees or business managers or somebody will buy it. And they're still trying to work on it right now. But so far, the place is shut down. And, you know, the last time I was there, I counted at least 12 employees between the drivers and the designers and the online order takers and the little lady who does the stuff, you know, over the phone and, you know, the young ladies who work at the front desk and the business manager. And it's so sad to think that suddenly without, you know, due to no fault of their own, you know, at least a dozen or two hardworking Twin Cities residents just don't have jobs anymore.
Yeah, it is a great opportunity. You would think someone would want to step in and say, hey, this is ready to go. It's got a built-in client list. It has an almost 100-year reputation in the marketplace. And you think someone would be able to jump in there and make a go of it.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping. And, you know, I never did get a chance to give Christy her flowers. Because at this point, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm a real loyal customer. I'm like, okay, so maybe tomorrow,
sure. Maybe
the day after tomorrow. But so far, you know, it's still closed. It's still shut down. So it's, you know, I don't really like being a Debbie Downer. But I have to tell you, Steve, that one hit me in the gut. I ain't going to lie to you. Yeah.
Yeah, it is sad, particularly these businesses that have been around for a long time. It really does sadden me. The mom and pop businesses, so to speak, that we've all become so familiar with. And I think it is important to try and spend. It's like you can go buy hardware anywhere, but I try to get out to the local hardware store down the street as much as I can because I know it's locally owned and there's a lot of local folks that work in that hardware store.
And you have to be intentional when you're doing stuff like that. You know,
absolutely.
You have to be thoughtful of, you know, the local toy store, the local, you know, folks.
Bookstore.
Bookstore, the Red Balloon, the Moon Palace, the Gully Wubble. You got to pass up all these places. You got to get over to Flavor Cafe. Nothing against, you know, any of the other retail chains. But, you know, here's a young African-American woman opened up a coffee shop in Frogtown. I leave Cottage Grove. And that's the one thing that Dee DePass asked me for that Star Tribune article. She was like, Shaletta, why are you... You live in Cottage Grove. Why do you have a house account at a business on Lake Street? Number one, it's a mom and pop shop. I'm a small business owner, and so I'm intentional about supporting other small business owners.
Yeah, no doubt. It's so important that the lifeblood of communities, not only in the city but in the suburbs and in small towns, it's important.
We got to do that. Okay, what we got to do to get in the playoffs? Are we out of the playoffs? Do the Vikings have a chance, Steve? What is going on? Because my blood pressure can't take it.
they have a chance, but when you don't have a quarterback you can lean on, it's pretty tough. Number one, they've got to win in Detroit and then get a fair amount of help. Tomorrow they need Chicago to win in Green Bay, among other things, for the Vikings to get into the playoffs. In reality, with their quarterback situation, you get into the playoffs, you know, what could they do? I mean, I think the Vikings, in reality, should be in a mode of thinking about what do we need to do in the offseason? What do we do about Kirk Cousins? How do we lock in Justin Jefferson? And how do we get more talent on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, there is a big to-do list for Kwesi Adolfo-Mensa and, of course, Kevin O'Connell, the head coach. They've got a lot to do before next year.
Okay, who's getting fired? Is somebody getting fired? Is this all just the luck of the draw? No. Is this just injuries? Did somebody not do their job?
Yeah, it's injuries. When you lose, for instance, Kirk Cousins, among others, DJ Wanham was a big loss on the defensive line. When you're losing players like that, TJ Hawkinson went down with a season-ending injury. When you're losing that kind of talent, particularly your number one quarterback, it's going to be a challenge.
All right, what's not going to be a challenge is people sticking around, because your show is coming up next. We've got Tech Talk. We've got Steve Thompson. We've got more on CCO Radio.